From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to this remarkable program we call Coast to Coast AM. First of all, thanks to our men and women of the armed forces and police officers and other first responders. I know most of you working on Thanksgiving. We appreciate you. Open lines a little bit later on tonight in the program, but here is what's happening. Well, it is quiet in Ferguson, Missouri. Thanksgiving, the weather, it's kind of cold out. The St. Louis area is a little peaceful tonight. There have been some little sporadic issues around the country. Los Angeles has had over the last few days a lot of arrests because of this entire situation of a police officer shooting an 18-year-old youth here in the St. Louis area. But things are starting to calm down, and let us hope and pray that sometime tomorrow they get a little better. We shall see. But two men indicted last week on federal weapons charges had plans to bomb the Gateway Arch and kill the St. Louis County Prosecuting Attorney Robert McCullough and Ferguson Police Chief Tom Jackson. Sources close to the investigation were uncertain whether the men really had the capability to carry out the plan, although the two did buy what was thought to be a pipe bomb from an undercover law enforcement sting. John Curtis, of course, onlinecolumnist.com. We turn to Dr. John Curtis for his expertise. John, I want to ask you for a few moments here about this mentality of protesting and why it turns to looting and burning down buildings when it's supposed to be just a peaceful assembly.
Well, one of the reasons for that is that there are these professional anarchists that are like roving around the world, not just in the United States, but anytime that there's a legitimate protest, you always have a group of anarchists that go, and they always exaggerate the violence. So that's usually what happens. And you'll note that there's a church that was burnt down in the Ferguson area that apparently was the Michael Brown's father, where he was baptized.
Yes.
And they're attributing it to racists. But, you know, I'm sure they're still conducting the investigation. But I think that, you know, when you look at the protesting that's going on nationwide right now, I mean, this is kind of another watershed racist event in U.S. history. This is very similar to the Trayvon Martin situation, the difference being that instead of, you know, a armed, you know, kind of night watchman, we had an armed, you know, police officer that engaged this kid who, you know, was suspected of taking some Swisher cigarillos. And it, somehow it morphed into a kill shot in the head. And, you know, he was interviewed by George Stephanopoulos on ABC, and I don't know if you caught the interview, but it was...
Oh, I sure did.
Yeah, it was an interesting interview in the sense that he really stayed on point, but when he was asked if he would do things all over again, do it the same way, he said he knows he did the right thing. Well, I think on the face of it, I don't think anybody thinks that this was a great success of community policing to have an 18-year-old kid killed for basically stealing a pack of cigarillos. Whatever the, however the altercation took place, you know, this Darren Wilson basically admitted he thought this guy was like Hulk Hogan or something, and he felt like a five-year-old. Now, what kind of a personal statement is that from a police officer? Obviously, this guy is not suited to wear the badge, easily panics, and panicked in this situation and wound up killing this kid unnecessarily.
Well, but
that
keep in mind, John,
never be put back. That officer should never go back on that police force.
He's
or
not.
Ever be
he's
reinstated.
Not. He's not. But keep in mind, two things happened on that horrible day. And one was based on the grand jury, and you know, they decided there's not enough evidence to hold a trial for Darren Wilson. They decided that.
Well, look at the grand jury, and this is something that was pointed out today by Antonin Scalia, okay? This is, we're talking about the most conservative member of the U.S. Supreme Court, pointed out that the Ferguson grand jury was an abortion of justice. It was inappropriately applied and essentially should be tossed out because no witness should be giving testimony like Darren Wilson without cross-examination. And you don't
Get that in a grand jury.
In grand juries. It's inappropriate. That's what Scalia said.
All right, but here's my bottom line, John, and you are right, I think, about these so-called rabble-rousers who come to protests.
Yeah.
Because we had a lot of people from outside the St. Louis area here, and I'm here now. They come in and they cause trouble. Yeah, set fires and stuff. I think the real bona fide protesters, you know, many of them are out there doing their thing, and they have a right to do that. But, you know, that fateful day, two bad things happened. One, of course, you had a police officer who, you know, may have gone to an extreme because he thought his life was in danger. And you had an 18-year-old who shouldn't have been reaching for a police officer's gun, who should have just backed off and should have just said, yes, sir, I'll get out of the street.
Exactly. And why was he in such close proximity to this officer? Because Wilson engaged him, basically, in an altercation. He should have called for backup. If he felt that the kid was too big or whatever, he should have just monitored him, waited for backup, and then they could have, you know, with additional police personnel, managed the situation in a less violent way.
Well, and, you know, I think
avoided.
It's unfortunate for everybody around. But, John, I appreciate everything you do for us, and I hope you had a great Thanksgiving.
Oh,
okay?
Thanks, George.
All right, Dr. John Curtis, you can track what he does, online columnist. .com. Well, people right now as I speak are lining up at stores around the country getting ready for Black Friday shopping. Some stores are opening up right now, as a matter of fact. My granddaughter works for a retail establishment, and she said, Papa, I have to work at midnight. So off she goes. While millions of Americans, by the way, were thankful just to arrive at their Thanksgiving feasts, a day after a super snowstorm dumped over 20 inches of snow on eastern states, it caused flight delays, power outages. Matter of fact, in Maine, at one point, 110,000 customers without power on Thanksgiving. How unfortunate. You've got all these people coming over to your house and you don't have any power. What a mess over there. They say that climate change and population growth will hugely increase the risk of people to extreme weather. The Royal Society warns that the risk of heat waves to an aging population will rise about tenfold by 2090 if greenhouse gases continue to rise. The first human trial of an experimental vaccine against Ebola suggests that it is safe and may help the immune system to combat the virus. 20 volunteers were immunized in the United States, and scientists at the National Institute of Health describe the results as promising. Well, it's time now for our update, our UFO update. Here's Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center, and happy Thanksgiving to you, Peter.
Well, thank you, George, and the same to you and to all our listeners tonight. I had a wonderful Thanksgiving with friends here in my little town in eastern Washington. I hope everybody had a nice and quiet and relaxing Thanksgiving. And by the way, I had a very nice time on the live chat forum on Monday night of this week.
Excellent.
Lex did a great job of monitoring it and had a lot of really good questions from the Coast listeners. That's one of their hallmarks, I think. They get right to the point, and it was really a lot of fun. But lots going on. Our webmaster took a part of his Thanksgiving day today to see to it that we got the latest material up on our website.
Perfect.
In preparation for this appearance. A lot of very interesting reports. I'd like to start by going back to last Friday night, the 21st of November, ironically the date of my last appearance on Coast. Just about the time that we were starting that broadcast, gentleman and his wife were on a cruise ship somewhere between Jacksonville, Florida and Savannah, Georgia, which was their destination. They were on the starboard side of the ship as it went north. They were looking out to sea and they saw suddenly a very, very intensely bright light form on the horizon. They don't know how far away from them it was, of course, but they were lying on their bed looking out their through a plate glass window in their stateroom. Suddenly, to their great amazement, an orange light split off from that light on their horizon and started approaching their vessel at high speed. Here's the bottom line, George. As it got close to being overhead from their ship, all of what the witness calls neon lights, I think he means fluorescent lights, came on in their stateroom and started flickering. Really interesting. I've talked about electromagnetic interference cases, but this is a really interesting one. And people can read that report again for the 21st of November at 11.05 p.m. East Coast time. I really encourage people, anyone who's interested in UFO reports and electromagnetic reports, to read it. Just to close off, you've had some very interesting events occur down near your way just tonight. At 6.10 p.m., Glendale or Burbank, California, two grown adults in their 60s, one of them, the woman, a licensed private pilot, saw two red objects with a yellow core come down out of the sky and maneuver around the sky and then suddenly start moving off at high velocity. I mentioned this case. Again, it was at 6.10 p.m. She measured the time. Tonight at 6.15 p.m., 5 minutes after this event over Glendale, there was a power failure in Goleta and Los Carneros, up very close to Santa Barbara. The power company is announcing that it won't be until 5 a.m. before they get the power back to the local shopping mall. Jeez. Don't have any idea at all at this point whether there's any connection to it. But at about 8.50 p.m. tonight, last case, up in Redding, California, two women were driving. I believe it was two women. They saw six orange objects over Highway 44. A highway patrol officer stopped to ask them what the problem was. He may have seen the same lights. He may have seen them before they stopped them. So lots going on, and a lot of really, really good reports posted to our website tonight, and people will enjoy reading them. So I'll keep an eye on the horizon and keep the Coast audience surprised at what's going on.
Well, nobody does it better than you, Mr. Davenport. Thank you so much. All right, this Thanksgiving night, we're going to talk about gratitude. Eldon Taylor joins us. His latest work, Choices and Illusions, and he's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. You know the man, Eldon Taylor, of course, regular here on Coast to Coast. He's the president, director of Progressive Awareness Research. We're going to be talking with Eldon about his latest work called Choices and Illusions. It's about the power of gratitude and positive thought. And I got to tell you, Eldon, nobody has the kind of positive thought that you have. You are electrifying, my friend. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Well, thank you very much, George, and happy Thanksgiving to you. And it's indeed my pleasure. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to join you this evening on Coast to Coast and your listeners and, you know, share this whole idea of the power of gratitude. As you know, that's one of the four cornerstone philosophies that I believe, you know, each of us can use to totally change and empower our lives.
And when you talk about gratitude, exactly what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about gratitude is, you know, like many things, I'll convolute the model quickly. Most people think of gratitude in terms of, you know, all of those things that I should count my blessings over. And that's good. That's true, too. But, you know, I learned a long time ago that the real power of gratitude comes from what we give. When we're giving, just flipping the model around, we discover what it is that gratitude means. Let me share, if I may, a short story. Years ago, I had a client referred to me, and you know, I looked over her intake sheets before she came into my office and saw that her very first therapist was a fellow by the name of Milton Erickson. Now, to me, Milton Erickson walked on water. I mean, he's the father of NLP, a hypnotherapist, a psychiatrist. And I honestly had the thought, you know, if Milton Erickson couldn't help her, what on earth am I going to do? We, you know, sometimes perspiration, inspiration, I'm not sure how things come together, but what I had was an idea. And so I brought her into my office, and I agreed to see her in what something called brief therapy, where I would see her for 10 weeks, once a week. And, of course, if she needed and there was an emergency, she could call, but she was going to have homework. The reason she was seeing me and had this whole history of all these different therapists that she had seen, and she was in care, it was a psychiatrist that had referred her to me, she was in concurrent care with a psychiatrist. The reason was she had attempted suicide on multiple occasions, and self-mutilation was a pretty common event with her. So she was on a number of different drugs designed, obviously, to, you know, immobilize those feelings and, you know, basically place her where, you know, not a lot really mattered. What I did is I sat down with her and I told her, this is what your homework's going to be. I want you to begin this week by doing one good deed every day until I see you again next week. And what I want you to do with that good deed is I want you to, at the end of the day, record it in a journal. And once you've recorded it in a journal, I want you then to reflect on that before you go to bed at night. I want you to think about, you know, how the person must have felt that you did the good deed for, how you felt when you did the good deed. And that's what I want you to be thinking of when you close your eyes and go to sleep. Second week, we had two good deeds. We worked up to five good deeds, and she didn't always do the five good deeds. But the important thing is this. 10 weeks later, for all intent and purposes, she was off of most of the pharmacology. That was withdrawn by her psychiatrist, not by me. I followed this woman, and I can tell you 3 years later, she was an entirely different person. The kinds of behavior that she had exposed herself to for over 20 years were gone. And the reason was this. When you think about why a person would mutilate their own body, why they would attempt suicide, it all comes down to the idea that they have no worth, they have no value, there's nothing for them to be grateful for. Life sucks and then you die and maybe we could do it quicker. That's the way they care. That's the attitude they have. Now, in order for someone to move through that, sometimes what we need is an inoculation, and the kind of inoculation that comes from helping other people. Because when I go to the aid of somebody else, my life suddenly matters. I Yes. suddenly define myself as having some value. And the more I do that, the more value I have. And as I build the value, I begin to identify the things that I'm grateful for. And in that process, I establish a gratitude attitude for all the opportunities I have, and then for all that I am and all that I might ever do and all that I might ever be. So in my view, gratitude is really service. It's, you know, we can be grateful, and as children, we often are. We receive a present, and it's what we always wanted, and, you know, we're thrilled, we're excited, we jump up and down, we hug our parents, and, you know, we're wired that way. In a sense, in one of the barometers that we look at with regard to gratitude is its moral nature. You know, gratitude is a moral matter. So as a young, spontaneous child, you know, we accept that this gift that we received, it fills our dreams and it's so exciting and we're, you know, we hug everybody, but that quickly diminishes. You know, we all have, I mean, most of us that have had children have seen a child just elated one minute and furious the next. They've forgotten all about what they're grateful for. You know, at the same time I say that, the human condition is hardwired in such a way that whenever we do something, like go to the aid of someone in trouble, or for that matter, simply sign a check, write a check to a charity we care about, the reward center in the brain, the caudate nucleus, actually, to use the words of Petter, MRI people, lights up. In other words, we're rewarded. And how are we rewarded? Well, we receive those wonderful neurochemicals. We're bathed with those endorphins, the body's natural opiates. It feels good. So we're hardwired to do service. And when we do service, we have true gratitude. It isn't the gratitude that is so fleeting as, thank you very much.
Hold on, Eldon. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about this because I want to ask you about karma as well. You do well. It seems to come back. Welcome back to Coast, Eldon Taylor with us. We're talking about his latest work, which is Choices and Illusions. Eldon, karma. I have found by practice that the nicer deeds you do, it comes back to you tenfold.
Yeah. What goes around comes around. You know, before I get into karma with you, I have to tell you this. Today in the kitchen, I was helping my wife do Thanksgiving. My boys mm-hmm. were here. And my wife was, you know, just pulled off some paper towels. She says, you know, I am so thankful for paper towels. She had a spill. And I am so thankful for the guy that invented them. And I'm so thankful for whoever came up with a paper towel holder. And, you know, George, I am a member of Coast Insider, and I am so thankful that you have Coast Insider. I've spent my day going along thinking about all the things that I am grateful for, all the things that, you know,
well, that's very nice.
My blessings. And I don't stay up as late as your show is, except when I'm a guest, but I do catch him on a regular basis through Coast Insider. So I just wanted to say, you know, I'm grateful for George Nuri, Coast to Coast, and Coast Insider. Okay.
Thank you.
Karma.
Yeah, I love it.
The fact of the matter is, when we look at the universe, we can look at it from a standpoint of what's reality, and from a behavioral standpoint, from the standpoint of psychology, perception is your reality. How you see the world, that's all that really matters. The transactions that go on between people inevitably will have errors. They'll have miscommunications. And it is that perception of what happened between people that creates either a good relationship or a bad relationship. I know that, you know, perception can be our adversary, because when we choose to suffer, it's not adversity that's suffering. Suffering is in our mind. You know, it is the perception of the suffering that we're dealing with. What happens is we become creatures of habit. If what we do is dwell on the negative, if we spend our time thinking about what we're missing in life, what we don't have in life, you know, opportunities that we should have had. If we find ourselves envious of someone else who has more than we have, or an opportunity that we think should have been ours, if we foster this kind of thinking, what happens is we breed circumstances that we will perceive in a negative way. The opposite is true. If we spend our time doing our best to stay in the positive, in the optimistic, in helping other people, in sharing with others, in you know, it doesn't matter what you do. And I've often, you know, told a story about that. That, you know, I'll just share again real quick, like, if you don't mind, George.
Sure.
When I was a boy, you know, I had a real conflict over religion, and there are all kinds of things in the Bible that just don't make any sense, and there are these definitions about an all-powerful God, and when you're a child and you're looking at definitions, it's easy to say, well, if God is all-powerful, can he build a rock large enough he can't lift it? And play those kinds of games. And so I was struggling with, you know, what does it mean? You know, who is the divine? Is there any real, you know, such thing? Is this all a myth? And I happened to be on a Sunday meeting where I was listening to a minister, and this was a meeting for teenagers, and this minister was giving us a lesson that was based on the idea that we're all created equal. And, you know, that made no sense to me either. And so I challenged him, you know, how can you say that? I mean, you know, there are children in this world that are born seriously handicapped. There's no such thing as equal. There are people that just, you know, they come to the planet and they are under, what, an umbrella with a golden spoon in their mouth, and there are other folks that struggle all their lives that just seem to be, you know, on the opposite end of everything. So how can you say that we're all created equal? And this minister said to me, you know, let me explain it to you this way. You know who Walter von Braun is? Now, I'm dating myself because at that time, Walter von Braun was over the front page of every magazine and newspaper in the country, probably internationally, because we had just launched the first ICBM. And it was he had spent his life developing the fuels and everything else that was involved in the successful launch of this intercontinental ballistic missile. So this rocket going into the, this was a major thing, and it was, like I say, over all the airways and the print media, et cetera. So, yeah, of course I know who Walter von Braun is. I said, okay, I want you to imagine how Walter von Braun felt as that rocket rose into the air. Yeah, he was going to be pretty proud of that, wasn't he? Well, yeah, of course, sure. He says, okay, now I want you to imagine, just think about some custodian somewhere. You know, a custodian, let's say he's in a school, and there's a teacher, and she's a new teacher. She's coming to the school, and she needs an office, and it really isn't an office for her. But there is this old storage area that's large enough. It's just been abandoned, basically. You know, it's in terrible condition. And so the custodian's assignment is to clean it and prepare it as an office. So he goes in there, and he does just that. He just, you know, he completely does his very best to clean this room. He gets to the floor, and it's one of these old black and white square tile floors with a, you know, the checkerboard kind of a layout, and it's just cruddy and filthy. So what he does is he comes in early one morning to get that floor, and he spends the entire day on it. He scrubs it. He uses a toothpick and a toothbrush in the corners. His knuckles are raw from the chemicals and the abrasion of scrubbing it. But come evening, he has waxed his floor, and now it shines like it never did when it was brand new. And he stands back with the light glistening on the room, and it's just, it is bright and new and shiny. Now imagine how he feels. Question, what's the difference between how he feels and how Walter von Braun feels? And you know, that was a real click in my head, George, because what it says is, you know, when I bring my very best to something, whatever it is that I bring my very best to, I'm going to have that rewarding feeling. I'm going to have those endorphins pouring down me. And that becomes another habit. So there are people that will say, you know, karma comes like from some heavy hand, some spiritual being that's just going to whack you around. But I'm going to tell you, in my view, whether that's true or not true, karma will come as a matter of your habits, a matter of your perception, a matter of whether or not you're looking at the world with that perception of life sucks and then you die, or you're looking at the world from the perception of the opportunities you have today to serve, to help, to be thankful for all the things you have, including your health, including your ability. You know, some people say to me things like, you know, I was in traffic the other day, and this guy cut me off, and it caused me to slam my brakes down, and you know, it is so aggravating.
You were a road rager?
No,
you?
Not me.
Hey, by the way, I didn't want to interrupt you. I think you meant Wernher von Braun, not Walter von Braun.
Oh, you're right.
Right.
You're right.
Okay.
Wernher von Braun. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I didn't want to stop your flow.
But, no, that's good. Okay. Thanks. Not Walter. Wernher. You're right.
Wernher. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
So did you road rage?
I'm not the road rager. No, they're telling me that they have been a road rager. Okay?
All right.
And so, you know, what we try to do when you have a behavior that is self-sabotaging, and that's clearly a self-sabotaging behavior, and it's going to happen to every single one of us, and it doesn't make us feel good, what we try to do is change the context in order to change the habit. If there is karma due to, you know, perception or anything else, what's going to happen eventually, because you're losing your temper, you're hammering on that horn, you're waving your middle finger, or whatever else you're doing, eventually you're either going to damage your own health, or you're going to bring about a situation that escalates beyond what you're really looking for on the highway. Accidents and other things take place that way. So, look, we know it's self-sabotaging. What do we do? Well, when we discover a self-sabotaging behavior, what we do is change the context. You and I have discussed context before. You know, my favorite example of that is the saliva in your mouth. If you rate it in your mouth, you love it, it tastes good, you're glad you have it.
Yuck.
If you spit it in a glass and think about drinking it back, it's a whole other ball game. It's pretty vile, right?
You got it.
So what we're looking for is to just change the context. So if what I do is I just say, okay, the next time that happens to me, I'm going to imagine that there's a child laying on the floorboards in the back, you know, a real health problem. Maybe they're bleeding, and this guy or woman, whoever the driver is, on the way to the hospital, I'm going to imagine that. That's what I'm going to see every time someone cuts me off. I know that that's a fiction. But at the same time, I know that by changing the way I perceive it, I will change my reactions.
True.
The body has two budgets analogous to a government. It has one for growth and it has one for defense. So I'm in that traffic situation where I jam my brakes and I get all hostile and angry, etc. What I have simply done is shut down the optimal operation of my immune, my endocrine, and my autonomic nervous system. So if I want to be happy, if I want to live healthy, what I'm going to do is be conscious about the habits that I have. I'm going to be conscious about my behavior. And when I do that, when I change the context, when I begin to manage that intentionally, what happens is all these good things that you suggested that just come back to us, what you sow is what you reap, well, they come back in bounties as opposed to, so this person cut me off at 5 o'clock today. I'm no doubt going to have somebody else tomorrow or right behind them with somebody that slowed down. Traffic is horrible. I hate it. You know, I'm weaving in and out of it trying to get around these a-holes and, you know, that's an attitude, and that attitude is the opposite of the gratitude attitude. You know, I was once asked, okay, everything has a contraindication. What's the contraindication to gratitude? What's the downside to gratitude? Well, the bottom line to that is the downside is it does away with self-pity. It does away with low self-esteem. It does away with guilt. It does away with shame. I mean, it kills these things. I mean, if you want to hang on to them, we'll go ahead and hang on to them. But know that you're making a conscious choice to do so. That, sir, is my approach to karma or karma-laden consequences.
But why does that work?
Well, I'll tell you why it works. If I go into the world today and I look at everything that comes to me as coming to me for some good, it changes, again, the lens or the perception. I love to tell stories because they stick with people. But years ago,
you know, I, as you know, was involved in law enforcement for years, and I was a pretty jaded kind of dude, and I used my education to run lie detection and specialize in forensic hypnosis and things of that nature. And, you know, one day I discovered just how jaded I had become, and I had my reasons, my own epiphanies. In fact, we've discussed them on your show very candidly in appearances in the past. But, you know, fast forward, I decided that, you know, I had to make some changes. And when you really want to make changes, what you do is, you know, you use the resources available to you. You buy that book, or you get that audio recording, or you see someone who can assist you. Well, I found a woman who turned out she was a metaphysical teacher, and she basically said to me one day, you know, Eldon, if you're going to change anything in your life, what you're going to have to do is give up this negative expectation about everything. You're so suspicious, so paranoid, so... I said, well, okay, you know, tell me how to do that, Connie. And she said, well, what you want to do is everything that comes to you, you want to see it as coming to you for some good. I said, you got to be kidding. Yeah, I mean, let me tell you about some of the things that I've seen. And she said, Eldon, you know, in the long run, when you look down the highway, most people will see everything that has ever happened to them as having some beneficial direction in it. So what I want you to do is just, when you see these things, try out this. Say to yourself, I can't wait to see what good comes from this. Now, George, honestly, I left her office, I drove to my office, and my office was in a shopping mall at the time, and it was a horseshoe-shaped shopping mall, but in the middle of that horseshoe, just where you entered, was a restaurant. And as I pulled in, my office is up at the top of the horseshoe, as I pulled in, car backed out of that restaurant, slammed into the side of my brand-new Eldorado Biritz.
Ouch.
Okay? Now, at that moment, I said to myself, honestly, I can't wait to see what good comes from this. If I hadn't have done that, when I got out of the car, I would have been hostile. The fellow that ran into me got out wagging a finger telling me I'd hidden my car behind his jalopy, and it was an old clunker, believe me. It would have been really easy to get upset. As it turned out, there were two law enforcement officers that were in the restaurant. They were coming out. They saw it all. I ended up in the car with one, and we were roaring about this guy, you know, wagging a finger at me, telling me that I hid my car, my brand new Cadillac, behind his whole piece of, you know, and yeah. So today, and many, many times in the past as I shared this story, whenever I think of it, a smile comes to my mind. It instead of it being one of those rage situations, one of those things that I think of with anger and passion, you know, I think of it with a smile. I think of, you know, and the outcome, well, my car was fixed. You know.
Yeah, it don't get done.
Attitude makes all the difference in the world. When I say to myself, when I change my perception and I say to myself, I can't wait to see what good comes from this, everything changes as I view it. So instead of being, oh, life sucks and then you die, instead of this terrible thing happened to me, I am instead waiting for the good.
You are indeed, and we're going to come back, talk a little bit more about your work, choices, and illusions, but let's take some phone calls, too, with you on Coast to Coast AM.